Gar and I, as you know, as we sit here together and talk about this, we understand accountability, and we are accountable for what this team did this year. We don't run away from it. We accept it. That's on us.
Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Your number one source for Chicago Bulls news and stories.
For me to be here in the NBA organization, such a historic organization, the Chicago Bulls, so it's just a dream come true for me.
Live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday.
This is going to be a process. You'll snap your fingers and it all happens at once, but that's the plan moving forward.
So kick back, relax, and get ready for the best hour of your day. Locked On Bulls starts now. Here are your hosts, Jordan Malley and Matt Peck.
What's up and welcome into Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. I'm Jordan Malley along with Matt Peck, live on Dash Radio, Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. Follow us on Twitter, at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls underscore Peck, and at Locked On Bulls. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls. Subscribe to the show, iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, and anywhere you find podcasts, you'll find us. Make sure to follow the Locked On Podcast Network on Facebook and Twitter as well. Well, welcome back. Well, first of all, I got to say welcome back to Matt Peck as he returns back to the show. Thank God, because I don't know if, you know, I had to knock off the rust a little bit with doing a solo show. I haven't done a solo show in probably close to a year now. So I had to knock off some of the rust, but I turned the mic on, talked for about 30 minutes, and hopefully people didn't hit the unsubscribe button in that one episode. But welcome back. We're going to get into a ton of things today. Zach LaVine. His return. I want to get your thoughts on that. Talk a little bit about the importance of January, but I've got to start with our segment of Around the NBA, because I feel like it's just too perfect what happened last night. If you were somebody who is an avid NBA fan, then you probably were watching the Clippers Rockets last night on TNT. And if you watched this game, you saw what unfolded, fights, flare ups, tension going on with the team. And then we had this super odd story come out that Chris Paul and company tried to take this secret passageway hallway into the Clippers locker room to confront guys like Austin Rivers and Blake Griffin, guys who were getting into it with some of the Rockets players. Blake Griffin even ran into like Mike D'Antoni at one point in the game, and Trevor Ariza ripped his shorts at one point. This was just like the most chaos I've ever seen, and the most petty non-story hit off like it did last night. And if you were awake and on Twitter, this was like top three NBA Twitter moments and Twitter nights in existence. So what'd you think about that reacting to all of that happened last night?
Yeah, well, Jordan, well, first off, it's good to be back. Thanks for holding the fort down for me while I was gone on Monday. It just struck me as something that was just so silly. And I know that it's kind of an unpopular opinion, and I may not even be old enough to have this opinion, but I do. And people, a lot of old-timers get ragged on for it, but it just made me think of missing the NBA days of old. And I mean, I remember it. I remember almost all of the 90s NBA, really not much of the 80s NBA, but when teams actually got in fights on the court, when that kind of stuff happened, and I know that David Stern, especially after the Malice at the Palace in 2003, you know, made drastic movements and progressive action to try to eliminate that element of NBA basketball because he thought it was bad for the brand, it was bad for the league, and I get that. I get it. It's you know, it's the NBA, it's not WWF or whatever, you know, whatever they're calling professional wrestling these days. I get that. But to me, it just seemed like such a silly, soft BS kind of drama that wasn't actually anything significant. I don't know if you saw Shaq and Charles laughing about this on Inside the NBA that night as part of that, you know, one of their segments.
Tension between the two teams will continue on across games.
Rosgold on Woody, thank you very much.
They're not laughing at you. No, they're laughing at the incident. The whole incident. They don't believe these two guys, Shaq and Charles, laughing.
I know why you're laughing.
Hey, I played in the NBA for 16 years, and I've been on TV for 18 years. It's the first time I ever heard police presence. Wait. They got a police presence? Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
Wait, come on, man.
Numerous social media reports that LAPD was called.
LAPD was called. See, these two, man.
Come on, man.
You know why they're laughing at me.
Come on, man.
Because they would.
Come on, man. Come on, man.
No, the issue is
y'all gotta stop it, man.
But it cracked me up because those were two guys who lived and played in a time when you might actually get into a fist fight on the court. That's how hard those guys were balling. That's how much they were not willing to give any ground, and they were sure that they were going to stand their ground. There was a little, you know, a little pissing contest, a little shoving match between, you know, a few people, Trevor Ariza, Blake Griffin, whatever, whatever. Austin Rivers is in street clothes yelling from the bench. And then there's this thing where Chris Paul, in his old stomping grounds, leads a couple of his teammates to the other team's locker room, and they all just like stand there like tough guys for a few minutes before people are escorted away from each other. I mean, come on. Like, what the hell? Why is this even a story? It's bogus.
I think it's hilarious. First of all, I think it's hilarious. Also, too, I want to talk, like, Austin, who did, can somebody explain to me who Austin Rivers thinks he is? Like, did Austin Rivers all of a sudden become this solid NBA player? I know he's having the best, before his injury, he's having the best season he's had in the NBA, and he's been in the NBA for what now, 7 years, 6 years, 7 years? So I just want to, I just need to understand, who does Austin Rivers think he is that he's like talking all this trash to players and like starting shit with people? And then also at the same time, it's like, all right, Chris Paul, you go to the Rockets for 1 year and now you want to play antagonizer in a game like this. Like, it makes for great comedy, but like at the end of the day, you got to understand that stars aren't going to throw punches. And like, there's very rare cases where things like that happen in the NBA. First of all, the NBA doesn't want fights to break out. Like, that's obvious. But I just think it's so petty and so funny that like they thought that they needed a police escort. And that's what Shaq and Charles Barkley were laughing so hard at.
Hello, police. Chris Paul trying to beat me up.
And that's what makes it for the hands down the best sports show out there for live TV and really anywhere. Like, they together, four guys that run that show are just fantastic together. And that's what they were laughing so hard at, is like that they were making this like a big deal that LAPD had to be called and there had to be cops escorted into the locker room and cops had to be surrounded while they were both taking the bus. Like,
hey, this is Blake Griffin. Chris Paul tried to get in the locker room. Get down here and save me.
These two guys are sitting there, Shaq and Charles Barkley and even Kenny Smith. They're like, are these guys for real right now? Like, are these guys kidding me with this? And nobody ended up throwing a punch, which is just hilarious.
Well, look, I mean, to your point about Austin Rivers, I will say even before he came to LA and started playing for his dad, Doc, he had always kind of had that reputation as a, you know, a scrappy guy who probably talked a bigger game than the one he actually put forth on the court in any given game. So I know that there was a lot said about the relationship between Austin Rivers and some of the other guys on that Clippers team, and maybe that was a point of contention and why Chris Paul wanted out, and there was a lot of, you know, people not getting along in that Clippers locker room over the last couple of years. But I don't think that Rivers talking a big game has anything to do with the fact that he is playing for his dad, who also, I mean, whether it's complaining to officials or talking trash after games, like, Doc has a big mouth too. So, you know, that part, as far as Austin's concerned, could be genetically handed down. He's a, you know, a big talker, a guy who loves to talk trash. But I don't think there's really any correlation to the fact that it's like, oh, it's the kid, you know, it's the coach's son chirping on the sidelines in street clothes. Another element is the fact that Chris Paul carries a significant reputation as well around the NBA. Sure, some of his teammates like him. Some of his teammates actually don't like him very much. And he kind of has a reputation as a whiner, a guy who takes cheap shots, a guy who flops. And maybe, I mean, Chris Paul is an unlikable guy. Austin Rivers is a kid with a big mouth. You get some, you know, they used to be teammates. Now they're not. There were some contentious points in that game, and then you know, it all comes to a head, and you have this silly thing that happens after the game where there's a confrontation in the locker room. But again, long story short, there was no confrontation. Nothing. It was just, oh, and then Clint Capella apparently knocked on the front door of the locker room while some of his teammates were trying to sneak in the back, and some person on the staff opened the front door of the locker room and then saw it was Clint Capella looking there all imposing or whatever and just closed the door in his face. End of story. I really don't get it. I guess I'm kind of glad that this didn't turn into a, you know, a malice in the locker room kind of thing because it would be a bad look for the league. But I'm kind of disappointed it wasn't. Like, I'm kind of disappointed it didn't go any further than it did, because then that would at least be a story and something that could continue to be a story throughout the season when these teams face each other again. If, you know, the Clippers keep their act together, get their act together, we might see an early, like, a first-round playoff matchup between these two teams, then great. There's a building and budding story. But this last night was nothing. It was nothing.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of what it did for the NBA, it's like, for people don't understand like the pettiness of the players in the NBA and just the way that they handle some type of the characters that are in the NBA, the egos that are in the NBA, some of the storylines that get bounced around too. Like, for the most part, these guys are joking around, but like when situations like this arise and like people want to play like fake tough guy in certain elements, like which you were talking about with like CP3 and some of these other stars that like, yeah, they want to act tough, but really at the end of the day, nothing's really going to come of it. But then I also think of the element of two is like, all right, there also are guys in this league that will legitimately throw punches, have no questions asked. I mean, I think about it. Go back to last year, like right around this time when the Bulls were playing the Raptors, and remember the on-court incident with Serge Ibaka and Robin Lopez when they exchanged they exchanged punches
or James Johnson in that Miami Heat game just like last week.
Oh, true. Right?
Like, you know, there are some guys in this league who are still out there, you know, and if you step on them, they will absolutely bring it, and they're not afraid to throw punches. You mentioned, I mean, you know, Rolo got into it last season. So it happens, but it's kind of annoying, especially when it's like these, you know, top tier players. And I can also, like, I'll name LeBron. I'm a big LeBron hater. I've come to respect him more as his career has progressed. But in one area where I still knock him is the fact that he is so much talk. He complains a lot. And anytime there's any kind of big potential confrontation on the court, he'll make a big deal of it to walk away like, oh, I'm going to be the bigger guy. It's like, James, when are you ever going to actually like look like a man on a basketball court if somebody's trying to pick a fight with you? All the things that like Lance Stevenson and their playoff series against Indiana, when Stevenson was just acting like a fool and like blowing in LeBron's ear or whatever. How great would it have been if LeBron just socked Lance Stevenson in the face?
Yeah,
come on.
It would have been great entertainment for us, but
the pretty boy stars of the NBA never, you know, and maybe it's because they know that they're too important to their team to act on those impulses. But come on.
You know for a fact, too, that they've got NBA officials and the coaching staff and even people high up in the organization are literally telling all the stars. And like, it's not like it's secret information or anything, but they're going to their stars and saying, yeah, we don't fight. We like, this isn't what we do here in the NBA. We don't want our stars fighting. And because it gives off a certain persona, it gives off a certain lack for a better term, a certain bad image for the league if guys are fighting, specifically their superstars. So I can see like the restraint that LeBron has too when guys do antagonize him, and I'm sure he gets it every single night from everybody. Like, there is that certain respect, but also there are guys out there looking to just find ways to antagonize the crap out of him. So at one point, maybe he does turn around and does make that mistake and throw a punch. And like, you got closest to it. I think the closest that LeBron would probably ever have to really pulling that pin and just exploding on somebody is Lance Stevenson a few years ago in the playoffs. But it makes for great NBA entertainment. So let's get to what everybody wants to hear now on this Bulls podcast. This is a Chicago Bulls podcast after all. So let's dive into some of those stories that we're talking about. Like, if you had listened to the episode yesterday, I ran solo, but I want to get Matt's thoughts on Zach LaVine's return, not only against the Pistons in his opening game, but also against that win against the Heat yesterday, but also some other things too about the importance of this month and a conversation I had yesterday talking about the importance of January. So let's start with Zach LaVine. Thoughts on what you saw from Zach LaVine, maybe anything that stood out to you in these first two games. I know a minutes restriction was there, but anything that just kind of stood out to you and was like, I wasn't expecting that for the first two games.
I mean, I don't know if anything necessarily that I saw from LaVine in his first two games that was unexpected, like shocking. But what I did see that was very immediately noticeable is that he is the best athlete on this roster. He is a guy, and for a guy who had been active for almost a full calendar year, when you're talking about playing in an NBA game, he immediately, from the get-go in that game Saturday against Detroit, looked like a guy who was not winded, who was not rusty, was not dealing with conditioning or the fact that he had tired legs because he wasn't used to playing. True, he only played 20 minutes a game, but he looked like the guy with the fastest feet. He looked like the guy with the best cuts. He looked like the guy on the Bulls with the best handle and the best crossover and the best pull-up. There were so many elements to his game that we saw in just a couple of nights and 20-minute runs where he looked like the best player that the Bulls have right now. And that's what Bulls fans wanted to see, because the biggest piece of that trade was what we were hoping would be a healthy Zach LaVine after coming back from such a significant injury. And by all accounts, what I saw through a collective 40 minutes, Zach LaVine looks like the guy that the Bulls front office were hoping to get in that trade.
I think once the Bulls are willing to take the training wheels off Zach LaVine, or just kind of take the leash off from him and allow him to play a full game and allow him to come off back-to-backs, which I don't even know. I considering all the Bulls options right now and considering maybe potential moves that are going to be made over the next two and a half weeks or so here, I figure we probably won't see Zach LaVine in too many back-to-back games, like back-to-back nights. I know they had talked about they wanted to be careful about that. John Paxson had referenced that multiple times. But as soon as he gets into a regular rotation and is finally the starter, just fully back, like, there's no doubt in my mind that he's going to drop at least 40 points in one game before the season's over, because that was the one thing that I think surprised me. And as much as we talked about how bad Zach LaVine is on defense, and it's still evident, but he's still young, I think him not skipping a beat in terms of offense, his shot, just his athleticism in general, hasn't skipped a beat. And I thought that was the coolest thing to come back, because like, we all still have that kind of lingering feeling about ACL injuries and major surgery, especially for a young player that you're willing to invest a ton of money in the summer, this upcoming summer, into. I thought just overall his bounce in his step, his athleticism, his offensive game didn't miss a beat since, like you had said, almost a year of inactivity. So I thought that was really great from LaVine.
And the other thing that I've been encouraged by is, and again, small sample size, just two games in a total of 40 minutes, but what we were hoping is that he could be another piece to help in what the first two years under Fred Hoiberg for the Bulls was a big problem, and that's floor spacing. And even if the Bulls do eventually send away Mirotić, who now we're about 24 hours after his trade restriction has been lifted. So the Bulls can be trading Nico any day, any minute now, if they so choose. LaVine can spread the floor. He started in his first two games hitting 5 of his 8 3-point attempts. And that's something that we hoped was a trend that we would see increase. His rookie year with Minnesota, he shot just 34% from downtown. His second season and third season, which was cut short by ACL, the torn ACL, he was shooting right around 38%, almost 39%, and he's hit 5 of his first 8. So if he can be a 40% three-point shooter in this Fred Hoiberg offense, that's going to be just another bonus to the athlete he is, who can create his own shot off the dribble and do all those things that we saw him do in Minnesota.
We're talking about leading up to that trade deadline, which is February 8th. So like I said, like about roughly 2.5, maybe 3 weeks from now, a lot of decisions need to be made by the Chicago Bulls front office in terms of taking a look at this team for what it is right now, which this sample size to me, I think, is so important to understanding where this team is now compared to maybe the first 23 games of the season where they went 3-20. And so since Nico has come back, the Bulls are 14-7 over a 21 game stretch. That's winning 66% of their games, 66% of their games. So if they continue on this path for 38 more games, the conclusion of the season, the Bulls would end up 42-40. And that would be good enough in terms of last year, if you're looking at the teams. That would be good enough for the 7th seed in the East of the playoffs. So this is where I feel like right now, for the first 2 weeks of January, I was right in saying that this is a really important month for the Bulls in terms of January, understanding the path that you originally wanted to take and the way you constructed this roster early on. now looking at it, it's almost like there should be a timer on their desk and saying, like, time is almost running out here. Like, you're putting a product on the floor, and game by game, they're staying in these games. They're pulling off wins that they shouldn't. And now I look at the games that the Bulls have. The Bulls have roughly 8-9 games before that trade deadline. They're playing 6 lottery teams currently. Two teams just barely over 500, and one team in the top 5, and that's coming Wednesday night against Golden State. So are you worried at all that if the Bulls continue to just let this roster play out, they're going to pick up some more wins and make it even more difficult to kind of dig themselves out, I guess, in terms of losing games for the rest of the season to try to maximize their opportunity to get that number one pick? Are you worried at all? Has that worry set in at all by watching this team, outside of all the positivity, just from what we want from the draft in 2018?
I mean, yeah, it's a concern. It's a concern if you're a believer in the path that the Bulls laid out for themselves when they traded Jimmy Butler on draft night earlier last spring. I mean, according to the plan laid out by the front office, not what was expected of this team halfway through this season. Paxson said it slightly more eloquently, but essentially said, yeah, part of this plan and part of the trade package is we plan on losing a shit ton of games next season, and we're going to get ourselves a nice high lottery pick. Again, said more eloquently by Pax, but that essentially was a big part of the plan. We felt okay with the package. Not just okay, they felt good about the package they got for Butler, and I think Bulls fans are starting to feel more and more okay, if not even thrilled, with that package that a lot of people poo-pooed on draft night when it happened. But again, big part of the plan, banking on another high pick in 2018. Now it's looking like, as you said, if the Bulls continue this recent uptick in trending wins, you know, a 42 ending the season with 40. Are you kidding me? Like, they finished 41-41 last season with the three alphas of Butler, Wade, and Rondo. It was not part of the plan to win 41 games this season. So yes, it's a concern. You look at the way that this has happened for the Bulls, and it's kind of fluky. I mean, we've mentioned all the games they've played in which their opponent has been missing either a star player or at least a key piece of their starting five or a key piece of their rotation off the bench. We also could be looking at that again on Wednesday night. It looks like Draymond and Iguodala are both questionable for the Warriors on Wednesday, which might, yes, get ready, Bulls fans, mean more of a certain $3.5 million man if either of those guys are inactive.
Classic.
You look at who the Bulls have beaten this season. Against the top 6 teams in the East, the Bulls are 3-13. Against the West, they're 2-14, and those two wins have come against Dallas, Blech, and Utah, who we know are struggling as well. They are a lottery team as of right now. And it's 7-15 in the East where the Bulls have those wins, 12-0. Teams ranked 7-15 in the East right now, they are 12-0. Are you kidding me?
Unbelievable.
So these Bulls are not world beaters. They're not. They are not a good team, but they are figuring out how to win late close games, which, as we've mentioned, in that 10-game losing streak that got them on the tanking path, they've kind of flipped the script there. So now, you know, you mentioned, will people get traded? Will they move pieces away to try and get this tank back on track? I'd still be okay with that being the plan. But now, like, so you trade Nico Mirotic, who's been very key to a lot of these wins that they've stretched together in December and January. But you also are getting a more and more active LaVine, who's probably going to get a longer and longer leash as far as the minutes he's playing. So maybe this Bulls team actually, to your credit, Jordan, you said this early before we even started the season when this roster was put together. You were more worried than I was that this team would not be bad enough to land a top 5 pick. And it's looking like you might be right.
So that's why I think looking at the tank too overall, and just like the teams that have all of a sudden the rug has been taken straight out underneath their legs, like look at the Magic. They've lost seven straight, and over the last 10, they're 1-9 in their last 10. Right now, if the season ended today, that them in Atlanta would have the same odds at 1-2 at that top pick, with a 60% chance of getting a top three in, equally at about 23% getting that number one overall pick. So I talked about it yesterday a little bit, but I want to understand more from your side of it too. With the team sort of trying to separate themselves now, maybe sort of the worst of the worst in the league, and sort of a lot of teams hanging around between 7 and 14, the Bulls right now are smack dab right in the middle of that. They're number 9 right now, tied in terms of wins with Utah and Charlotte, only 3 games away from New York, Philadelphia, and Portland. And so, more importantly here, the Bulls have to play Portland. They have to play the Clippers. They have to play the Bucks. They also have to play Utah, and they have to play Sacramento. So there's a lot of teams that are like hanging around the fringe playoff contention, late lottery, and some even in the top lottery. But this is what I'm talking about, like separating yourselves and understanding where the Bulls are hanging out right now in the possibility that ending up with a pick between 8 and 14 is not at all what the plan was this season. I know it's fun as a Bulls fan to watch what they're doing right now, and believe me, I don't want to take that away from any Bulls fan out there or any fan in general that is like conflicted right now with like, I like watching good Bulls basketball, especially over the last 3 weeks. And I really like watching Lauri Markkanen develop. And I really like watching Chris Dunn with all the confidence he's playing with. And now with Zach LaVine coming back, and it's exciting. And like Bobby and Nico have chemistry on the floor, and like things are starting to click. But I don't want that to fog up the mind of what the clear goal is, and to understand how good the talent is at the top five of this class. Like those are franchise changing types of talent that you're getting at 18 and 19 years old that could set you up for a decade. So I would say, in terms of taking your feelings and looking at what's going on with this Bulls team, I think it's super, super important for the Bulls, even if they're not willing to budge on trading Nico Mirotic, and they're not going to get a first round pick for him. Maybe they go around the NBA and look and say, okay, nobody's legitimately going to give us a first round pick for him. Fine. But move Robin Lopez then, and move Justin Holiday, and move any other piece that you think might help you win games, especially leading up to that trade deadline, which is another piece to it. I wouldn't take Zach LaVine off that leash until after the trade deadline's over and you've decided the path that you've taken. And it would make sense. Like, you don't want him on the floor either, and you don't want some of these other guys that are putting up wins or keeping you in games with competitive teams and ultimately going to screw around and play with the factor that you could go from being a 30-40% chance team of getting a top three pick to a team that has a less than 5% chance. And it could be so easy right now with where the Bulls sit at 17-20. What are your thoughts on it?
It's a tough, conflicting issue because you're encouraged. It's like we were bracing ourselves for a season of unwatchable Bulls basketball, at least certainly until LaVine got back. But because of the Nico Bobby thing, Markkanen got thrown in as a starter and blossomed, and he has done nothing but impress and surprise us halfway through his rookie campaign. Dunn is impressing people compared to what we thought we were getting from the player we saw struggle as a rookie in Minnesota. So, like, there are all these pleasant surprises popping up, right? I mean, David Nwaba, who saw that coming? Pleasant surprises everywhere, which in a sense is good for this young core that the front office is now trying to build after the departure of their franchise player. And you can't be too upset about that, right? But at the same time, why did the Bulls make that Butler trade? Because they knew that if they kept him as the centerpiece of that team, they would be no better than middle of the road. Maybe we make the playoffs and, you know, put up a fight in the first round. Maybe, heck, things go our way. We get a positive matchup. We get to the second round. And maybe we, you know, as it was with Butler as their best player 2 years ago, don't even make the playoffs. That's the NBA purgatory, the NBA, and it's not purgatory, it's hell. That's where you do not want to be, and that's why they traded Butler. So the Bulls don't want to be back there now. The Bulls don't want to be a 41-41 team in the Eastern Conference. That's what they made the Butler trade to get out of that and try to start fresh. And I mean, if this rebuild is ahead of schedule because of the surprising talent and level of play we're seeing from the pieces we got in the Butler trade, yeah, at the end of the day and moving forward, that's probably a good thing. But you're forgetting, wait, is a core of Markkanen, Dunn, LaVine good enough to actually contend in the Eastern Conference? As long as LeBron is in the Eastern Conference, as long as those growing Boston Celtics, now led by a still very young Kyrie Irving, is in the Eastern Conference, as long as DeMar DeRozan and John Wall are in the Eastern Conference. No, I'm sorry, but we're talking about the high ceiling that exists for this young Bulls core, and I believe in that. But if you're talking about championship contention, which is what the Bulls fan base expects, no. The fact that they might now miss out on a top five pick in this very top heavy and loaded 2018 draft class, no, that is 100% undeniably a bad thing.
So with that too, I want to also remind people about the lottery too. Let's remember too, for the zillionth time, I'll bring it up. And for the new listeners that we do have, The NBA lottery is going to change after this year. It is not going to be as incentivized to tank and to lose games. This is the last year that you will have a 25%, potentially 25% chance. If you're a bottom three team, you have the highest percent chance at getting a top three pick or getting the best chance for that number one pick overall. Once it changes next year, there is no incentive to tank as hard as you would maybe want to do in the past. And like teams like Philadelphia have done over the past. Like, that's why I think the combination of the talent that's available at the top five, top six, top seven, and then also parlay that with the changes that are coming to the NBA draft after 2018, I think is all more important to what the Bulls should be doing. And believe me, this is conversations that are happening on a half hour basis in the Bulls front office, in the organization, over the last month, probably 2 months, and it's probably gotten even more accelerated now that Bulls are picking up wins, now that Zach LaVine's back as well. So I think this is going to be another important 2-3 weeks stretch, not only for what the team does on the court, but what the front office does in their moves to maybe trade away some of these guys and pick that and stay with that ultimate goal of this season and what this team was designed to do. So before we wrap up the show, I want to get your quick thoughts on Zach LaVine's interview at ESPN 1000. What did you take away from that? And I thought he said a lot of good things, and I do have a couple of things, but I want to get like your overall vibe from him after him playing and kind of just getting back into the routine and some of the things that he said about maybe the locker room or maybe Markkanen or maybe even playing with Coach Thibs. Like, what was your overall energy from Zach LaVine?
Yeah, I mean, nothing earth-shattering in that interview on Waddle and Sylvie this afternoon, but one thing that he did say that I thought was interesting, and I know that, you know, Bulls fans are probably very interested to know this. You know, we've talked about who LaVine can be as a leader and as the face of a franchise guy in a very big, you know, sports city that has a lot of heavy expectations. And he seemed very comfortable with that. He continued to talk about that and the fact that, you know, when it comes to him being a restricted free agent this summer, he and the front office are, you know, in a mutual understanding. He wants to be here. They want him to be here. And he wants to be that guy. And he talked about growing into more of a leader. And that's something you and I have discussed as well, Jordan. But to that end of being the guy and the face of the Bulls franchise in coming years, and this is something that Derrick Rose couldn't really do, and Derrick Rose said he had little interest in doing when he was the face of the franchise, something that Jimmy Butler, I mean, unless you want to count Dwayne Wade, couldn't really do, and that's recruit. And I'm not talking about recruiting in the sense of high school kids getting recruited to play at certain college programs. I'm talking about recruiting big-name stars in free agency to come play in Chicago. Because that is something the Bulls more or less have failed at across the board in the regime of Gar Foreman and John Paxson. They couldn't get Wade, LeBron, or Bosch in 2011. They tried again to get, they tried again several years later. They tried to get Kobe. They've tried to get all of these big name players over the course of several seasons, and they've always come up short. And LaVine said in that interview, he thinks he could be a good recruiter. He says, you know, he talks to a lot of guys around the NBA. He's got good relationships and friendships with a lot of guys in the NBA. And if LaVine, in the back half of this season, with the more and more the Bulls let him play, proves himself to be a budding star in this league, one who is still very young, one who hasn't even really hit his prime yet. I know you and I have said, like, you know, this summer's probably not about big free agency signings for the Bulls, despite the cap room that they do have. Zach LaVine might actually get some eyes towards Chicago with a very young and talented rookie in Lauri Markkanen, with a developing and promising point guard in Chris Dunn. That might actually become an enticing place for star players to play.
I also thought it was funny the way he kind of threw out this comment too. He goes, recruiting's funny. It's sort of easy. It's just like high school recruiting. He says, you just sometimes gotta say the right things at the right times. You know, you just gotta say what people want to hear. And I thought that was funny from a guy that does have a very loud, very, very grabbing personality. Like, people gravitate towards a guy like that with such positive energy, the way Zach LaVine, I think, has. And the compliments just from around the league, from people that cover on a daily basis, when Zach LaVine comes in, just the willingness to sort of be that guy, be that leader, be that face. I think it's exciting for a guy that actually would want to recruit if he does sign that long-term deal with the Bulls in the summer. I think it's important too. You touched on something else as well. I think this year being the year that you want Chris Dunn, you want Lauri Markkanen, you want Zach LaVine all to progress as players. You want all that player development to work out good. And so with Zach LaVine, you only get like about 2 months of that, which is fine. I think next year is an important step to showcase. And in terms of talking about big time free agents, like you had said, not a lot going on in 2018, but you get to 2019, you got a ton of talent that the Bulls are going to have a ton of flexibility to play around with. So I think next year will be an important year for Zach LaVine to showcase what the Bulls have in terms of talent. They bring in a top seven pick too to go along with that, showcase what Chris Dunn, Lauri Markkanen can do and Zach LaVine can do together as a core. And then you kind of bring that to the table in 2019 to some of these big stars and say, hey, look at what we're building. We got a young, exciting coach which by the way, it seems like Zach LaVine's buying into what Fred Hoiberg's doing, but we can get into that later. But a young, developing coach with energy and positivity, a style that maybe a lot of NBA players are going to want to play. And then you combine it with all of this young rising talent. And then you combine it with the third largest market in the United States. The opportunities are endless here to make money. So I'm super excited for what Zach LaVine could do potentially, maybe a year and a half, 2 years down the road with free agency.
A dirtier side of that coin as we wrap up here is maybe Zach LaVine and his new, young core of stud teammates, Markkanen and Dunn, maybe they are an enticing package for free agents. But what was said about the Bulls front office the night they traded Jimmy Butler? And yes, it came from Jimmy Butler's trainer, Travell Gaines, but it is something that's been said and recognized by a lot of people in the NBA, whether they are players, whether they are coaches, whether they are other front office executives or members of the media. The Bulls front office, as currently constructed, is one of the least trusted, least respected front offices in the National Basketball Association. So maybe LaVine could go out there and do some great work and say, hey, look at this. Look at this young talent we have on this team. Look at this big city. Yeah, it's cold for most of the season that you play here, but it's Chicago. We got great food. We got great entertainment. We have a great fan base. Come play with us. There might be some players thinking, hey, you know what? That Bulls roster is pretty intriguing, and they've got some promising years ahead of them. And Chicago, not a bad place to live. But that front office. Do I want to play for that front office? Some to think about.
But that's going to about do it here on Locked On Bulls. Remember, you can follow us on social media at Locked On Bulls, at Bulls underscore Peck, and at Jordan C. Malley. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls. Subscribe to the show on iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, and anywhere you find podcasts, you'll find us. We're live on Dash Radio, dashradio.com, and the Dash Radio app. On the Nothing But Net channel, live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time, three times a week. nothing but basketball on the Nothing But Net channel. So Dash Radio, go check it out. We'll be back tomorrow with a brand new episode. We want to preview everything that's going to come into consideration as the Golden State Warriors will step foot in the United Center, and we might be getting a lot of $3.5 million in cash consideration, signs, shirts, all that good stuff tomorrow. So we'll break all of that down and so much more. We'll also take your mailbag questions tomorrow too. So please send us all your questions, any comments, concerns. Even if you just got something to rant about, tell us about it here at LockedOnBulls@gmail.com or over on social media. But for Matt and Jordan, we are out. Have a great night.
Hello, police. Chris Paul trying to beat me up.
Locked On Bulls, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA. Locked On Bulls is live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, starting at 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central. For more content and to stay up to date, head over to LockedOnBulls.com, part of FanRag Sports.